You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, one, two. Broke like a little country. Rock and roll and blues. Cause we sure love playing for good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.
Welcome to Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features discussions with and the music of local musicians. I am your host, Dave Lake.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I have back Michael Ching, the Interim Artistic Director, and Chad Sonka, the Education and Outreach Director of the Savannah Voice Festival. And we're talking about season 13 of the Savannah Voice Festival, themed Once Upon a Time, which runs from August 7th through August 17th at many locations around Savannah and Chatham County. Welcome back to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Michael Ching and Chad Sonka.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us again, Dave.
So, catching up a little bit, Michael, I heard that you're working on a new opera for the Taos Opera Institute.
Yes. Well, they are going to have their 20th anniversary 3 years from now. And so there's a very preliminary chat about something with a vaguely Southwestern theme that is going to have something to do with the random chats that people have when they're put on ski lifts together. It's going to be set up somewhat similar to Speed Dating Tonight, which, of course, they've done at the Savannah Voice Festival and other places. And so it's going to be modular and flexible and hopefully funny, because I've heard that I don't do much skiing, but I hear that there are just a lot of strange encounters that result from that sort of thing.
And so are you going to have to ride with different people on a ski lift to get ideas for what the content should be? Or are you hearing stories from other people?
I'm going to count on other people to do that for me. Yeah, that's not going to be my job. I'm just going to be hearing about it secondhand. I'm not have you ever skied, Chad?
Not since I was a child.
Yeah, I haven't skied since I was in high school. So, now I'm at the ripe old age where I don't want to break any bones, right? You wouldn't probably want to do that either, right, Dave?
Exactly. I always say I don't do these things because I like my bones in the position that they are right now.
That's right. That's right. So Savannah is a much more left bone breaking kind of place.
Yes. Right. No skiing here. Well, Michael, I heard a song that appears to be perhaps from the new opera, and that's called Magpie.
Oh, that's a new song for the opera I'm writing for the Taos folks. And, you know, a magpie is this beautiful sort of crow-like black and white bird that's very sassy, and it's very Southwestern. And so that's kind of how we're launching that, to have that kind of Southwestern theme for this particular show.
They try to fly, but all they
So yes, I've done my operas about Savannah and want to move on to different pastures, not greener pastures. And I'm just delighted that we've got Jody Goebel in the second year of the composer in residence. And I'm very grateful to everyone on the board and staff of the Voice Festival that I guess I made enough of an impact and an impression that the Voice Festival wanted to be sure to continue the position, because it's rather unique. Mm-hmm. There are not that many institutions that have a composer in residence, particularly if there are institutions that are singing, that are about singing and teaching of singing. But new work is part of what we do. It used to be very, very normal in the 19th century, the 18th century. Most of the material on a concert would be new, whereas now the new might be 1/5 or 1/4 of the program. But I think it's kind of had a resurgence in the last 10, 20 years.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Jody will have her own perspectives. And she's just a really, I have been trying to encourage her to spread her wings and write her own words. And she's done that. She wrote most of the words really for the Eleanors, the opera that premiered in January. And so we want her to get her own spin on doing things that are appropriate for the Voice Festival.
And Chad, of course, you are continuing to help save the world from ignorance.
Oh, wow. Well, Dave, coming from you, that's high praise. I appreciate that. So yeah, in addition to my work with the Milne's Voice Programs, I'm the head of the voice area at Iowa State University and direct their voice programs and opera there.
And Chad is effectively what I would call the artistic administrator of the Savannah Voice Festival. It's the person that actually ever gets the things done and figures out, the person who's available for the performance on the 7th can't be available for the performance on the 9th, but they can be available for the performance on the 13th. And so he is the one who's, I called it a little game of Twister. He is the one who figures out how everybody can play be on the Twister board and not fall over. And it's really quite complex and interesting, because some people come in for just a few days.
Right.
Some people come in for a week. Some people come in as guest artists. Some people come in wanting to just do the educational part of the institution. We've got a new outreach specialty. I mean, it's something that Chad's wanted for a long time. There's a group of artists that are specializing in doing outreach for the community. We have the new partnership with Georgia Southern University. And so it's really quite a three-ring circus.
Well, thank you. And I mean, truly, before we go into this, I have to extend my gratitude to Cheryl and Maria and Michael and everybody who's on faculty and help run the Milne's Voice Programs for essentially teaching me how to do it all the way back when I was in my mid-20s. So really, thank you for that. And I think it's one of the things that makes the Milne's Voice Program so special, in that it's not prescriptive. It is entirely designed to serve artists and help artists no matter where they're at, as well as grow some of their abilities that they might not have known that they had. And that was Maria and Cheryl's dream from the beginning, all the way back when the Milne's Voice Program started in 2000, to supplement what is happening in the universities that we don't always get the time to teach and cultivate.
It teaches young artists to be nimble. And I don't know if in a university program, people get assigned things and then they have a whole darn semester to learn them until the performance takes place. And that, of course, isn't always the real world situation. The real world situation is, we'll call you up and, are you available for this job? And you have a month to learn this role or whatever. And, by the way, could you sing this benefit concert while you're here? And that's got a whole different repertoire. And so the nimbleness and quickness is really part of one of the things that we do at the Voice Festival. Now, we don't throw people into sink or swim situations, of course, but if this is built properly, a young artist can build their confidence and realize, I don't have to take 4 months to learn this role. I can Right. learn this role in a month, or I can learn this song in a week if I've got to.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I have Michael Ching and Chad Sonka of the Savannah Voice Festival. So, Chad, could you go back then through the types of participants that we're going to have at the festival. Because in past years, we've had young artists who come to the festival, and they're involved in pretty much everything throughout the festival. Has that changed, or do we have these other things in addition to those that group?
As is common to say in theater, Dave, it's a yes and situation. Yes and. We're doing both. So yes, the centerpiece of our festival is really the studio artist level. And those are the ones that, well, quite frankly, on which the Milne's Voice Programs was built. It was originally conceived as a training program and a mentorship program. So we folded that into the structure of the festival. So we have the studio artist level, those artists that are coming to pay and study and work and perform. Then on top of that, we have a few artists that we call our overarching festival artist level that might be more at what is commonly known in our business as the emerging artist level. Ones that are just breaking through to some of those bigger contracts. And then new this year that Michael mentioned that I'm so excited that we built together is the outreach artist track. Artists that are going to be trained to use different kind of skills and be nimble, again, out in the community to engage, say, in hospice care facility performances or performances for young children or performances out in the middle of City Market and everything in between.
I saw somewhere on the spreadsheets, what's the number of outreach events that you've already got booked?
The number of outreach events, including artists that will be performing at places of worship, places all around Savannah and the nearby communities. Already we have over 20 outreach events scheduled.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Michael, even though you're interim artistic director, so many of the thoughts come from you. Chad has to implement these things. So you can sort of sit back and say, you know, that's Chad's circus and those are his acrobats.
Well, Maria Zuvis, of course, our co-founder, and Cheryl Milne's, our other co-founder, are, of course, intimately involved in this. And the way I've always described this, and I think this analogy has stuck, is that the management structure of this institution is opera as Greek family. And there's a lot of people around the table, and they all have input, and sometimes they raise their voices, but inevitably, everything works out quite well in the end, and people get along, and afterwards, everybody, I don't know, goes out and has a beverage afterwards.
Yeah.
So it's a really, really unique way. I've never seen this, and I certainly didn't run Opera Memphis this way when I ran it for 18 years, but it's a wonderful way for everybody to feel like family. And one of the exciting things about it is that I think the Savannah Voice Festival does an incredibly good job of nurturing the young artists in the studio program and then bringing them back when they become young artists, as Chad described, and then bringing them back again when they become, you know, really established, emerging, important young artists in their own right. So it's been a great system of bringing the artists up continually, and it creates a lot of loyalty, not only from the art on the artist side, but also on the side of the opera fans, the concert goers, the people who develop relationships through housing artists, all those kinds of things create these kinds of bonds. So when, you know, some Savannah Voice Festival artists, has their Carnegie Hall debut, there's a row of Savannah Voice Festival folks, sometimes in the front row, there to see them. And so it's a wonderful nurturing process that I think is not completely unique, but it is rather unique in our business.
Well, and the fact that the Voice Festival has over its years, this is now the 13th season, has progressively each year developed more and more under Chad's leadership, the outreach component of the festival, which is a remarkable thing in Savannah, actually, because each of the major arts organizations here in Savannah have a strong outreach to the community, to involve the community more and more into the musical organization.
Well, we always have to explain in the opera business, you know, why we are singing something that was written in 1850 in Italian or 1870 in German, and why we are singing those things and why they matter and why they are beautiful and why they are meaningful to audiences in 2025. And so outreach is really an important base of everything that we do. You know, any arts organization in opera that doesn't do a lot of outreach is really missing an opportunity to grow its audience. And so, yes, we are very happy to have the well-heeled patron, but we also want to delight someone on the street. We want to delight someone at a retirement home or at hospice. So we want to make sure everyone feels like they have access to this beautiful music. And of course, you know, you agree with us that it's perfectly all right that an Italian opera aria is beautiful and kind of universal. But sometimes it takes a little bit of explaining about why that's true.
Right. And as Chad mentioned, you need to be out there explaining why it is important to listen to music written in the late 1700s or late 1800s in a foreign language like Italian or French or German, but also why it's important to celebrate the operas that have been written and will premiere here at the Savannah Voice Festival, or operas which are being written and will premiere in 2028.
Exactly. Absolutely. And collaboration is key as it relates to that, too. One of our strongest partnerships, of course, is with the American Traditions Vocal Collection and in the form of the Shaw Milne's American Opera Award that's presented every year to one of their participants. So in a town, well, and I'll say town because Savannah feels familial and small like that. And I mean that in a positive way. In a town the size of Savannah, that kind of collaboration, rising tide floats all boats in that arena. So we love our partnerships in Savannah in making sure opera has access for all and these beautiful voices are heard.
Well, Savannah is truly a town. We call it the city of Savannah, but it has about 150,000 people in it. And the metropolitan area, of course, is much bigger, but it is a town that is wonderfully filled with music. Mm-hmm. I mean, Savannah Voice Festival joins the Savannah Philharmonic, joins the Savannah Music Festival, joins the American Traditions Collection, as you just mentioned, and the Jazz Festival. In terms of wave after wave after wave of music coming through town, but we also have a lot of music. You walk down on River Street and you hear music all the time. In fact, for a small town, I bet you there's no other 150-person town in the world that has three operas written about it.
That's probably, and that composer.
And more to come, I'm sure.
More to come. Yes. That's right.
This is WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings Community Radio with Global Soul.
You're listening to WRUU, your local radio station, for people just like you, hosted by people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and others from the Savannah and Lowcountry area. In other words, WRUU is your community radio station. Please help us by donating whatever you can to help your neighbors and friends stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
This portion of WRUU's programming is brought to you by listeners and by the 2025 Savannah Voice Festival. Season 13 of the Savannah Voice Festival is themed Once Upon a Time and includes opera, art song, musical theater, classical cabaret, and popular song. It is Everything Voice from August 7th to the 17th at venues around Savannah and Chatham County. More information and tickets can be found at www.savannahvoicefestival.org.
The first Friday for folk music performance on Friday, August 1st, starting at 7:30 p.m., features two sets with local indie folk multi-instrumentalist Susanna Kennedy, opening for the traveling folk blues pop troubadour Donna Frost. The concert is at the First Presbyterian Church, Stewart Hall, 520 Washington Avenue, Savannah. More information can be found at savannahfolk.org. This music is often called classical music, but remember, Mozart, Beethoven, and Liszt were the rock stars of their time, so I simply call it great music. I'm your host, Dave Lake, and join me for four centuries of great music, with new episodes each week on Sundays from 3 to 5 p.m. We also have encores of these episodes on Saturdays from 3 to 5 p.m. from mid-June to early December. Welcome back to Music Local and Sustainable, and I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I have back Michael Ching, the Interim Artistic Director, and Chad Sonka, the Education and Outreach Director of the Savannah Voice Festival. And we're talking about Season 13 of the Savannah Voice Festival, themed Once Upon a Time, which runs from August 7th through August 17th at many locations around Savannah and Chatham County. So let's dive into this year's Savannah Voice Festival. As I mentioned in the introduction, the Savannah Voice Festival opens and runs from August 7th through August 17th. But there's actually an event occurring as part of the festival before the opening of the festival on the 7th. And that is on Tuesday, August 5th, we have a Masters in Voice with Maria Zuvez. And Maria Zuvez, of course, is a co-founder and president of the Voice Festival. Tell us a little bit about what these Masters in Voices are about.
Absolutely. So, as I mentioned, a cornerstone of the Milne's Voice programs is education and mentorship. And our artists receive that in several different ways, but the public can see that live in action in the form of these masterclasses in this Masters in Voice series. So it's a full series. There will be four different masterclasses presented throughout the festival. The first one is, yes, Maria Zuvez on Tuesday, August 5th. And all of these masterclasses, and I'm sure we'll highlight other ones as we go through the festival here, all of them are at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's a nice little refresher, nice little break in your afternoon to come and hear these young artists work with experts in the field in our business. And what we found with our audience is that the more they engage with this music and see the process, or how the donuts are made, as it were, the more they grow to appreciate the art form as well as the artist. So it's a great way for audiences to engage on that level. Oh, and did I mention that they are free? So it's a great way for the community, as well as, say, artists that are in the area, to come in and see what this kind of preparation is all about.
Well, there's the famous phrase that you can enjoy your sausage, but you don't want to know how it's made. Opera and voice. I'm going to broaden it out to voice because, as you both know, I'm a fanatic for the art song, which is a different expression of the voice. But expression of the voice in opera or in art song is a very complicated process. It's not just somebody getting up there and belting. It is a very complicated process, and it involves a lot of steps. And these masterclasses are so wonderful about exploring those steps, because at least I've found that this is a perfect way to enhance your enjoyment of the final performance.
Beautifully put, Dave. I don't know if I could say it any better than that. Yeah.
I mean, it's a very, very complicated art form because, first of all, almost all the time, a singer has to memorize their music. Singers have to memorize their music much more often than instrumentalists do, unless they're concerto soloists. And so they have to memorize their music. They have to express their music in a way that instrumentalists don't usually do because they've got a clarinet in their mouth. I mean, a singer is expected to be able to enunciate the text clearly. They have to study the diction in all these foreign languages. They have to emotionally present the text, whether it's just from the neck up or with their full body in a case of an opera. They have to do all of those kinds of things. And they have to, at least in most of our art form, they have to do it without the aid of microphones. And you know how you feel after you've been to a sports event, how hoarse you feel. They can't do that. They can't feel that way. It's not good for them to feel that way. So they have to be trained carefully, be able to do it like that, sing beautifully, and then sing beautifully again a few hours later or a few days later. So it's a very complicated set of skills that have to be balanced. And at the same time, it has to, of course, look effortless.
Yeah.
And that's really quite a challenge and for them to be able to do. So they have to learn all these things and then somehow stop thinking about them when they're doing them all at once. And I just have the greatest admiration for singers. There's this thing in the music business that singers are somehow less, and that's absolutely not true. They are more because of all of the things that they have to do at the same time and make it look easy.
Well, all music is telling a story, but vocal music specifically tells a story through the lyric, but also tells the story through the emotional expression and through the involvement of the audience in the character that the singer is trying to express.
Yes. The way I like to put it, it's a kind of triangle. You have the creators, the people who write the words and the music or the story. You have the performer who's translating that material and expressing the material. And then, of course, you have the audience. And I'm not sure whether the audience is on the top of the pyramid or wherever it is in that triangle. It ain't nothing without the audience.
Yeah,
You got to have that audience. Eventually, it's much easier to perform with an audience than without one. Well, don't you think, Chad?
Absolutely, 100%. The reciprocation of energy, right? Otherwise, we singers tend to feel like it's a vocalese, or it can feel like it's for ourselves. Speaking of Jody, she's my colleague at Iowa State University, and she has this great phrase that she uses when we are coaching one of our young singers, which is, singing is a gift you give other people. It's not something you keep for yourself. And I just love that as a concept, because as Michael so astutely pointed out, there are so many things that we're thinking about while we're singing. So if we can keep the message simple, it might be complex, but direct, as well as remember that singing is a gift we give other people, we're in good shape.
Well, the masterclass does two of these three things. Really, what this masterclass does is working to enhance the singer and increase the skills of the singer in a variety of ways. And we'll talk about some of those different ways by some of the different masterclasses, because this year, it's just so brilliant how these masterclasses have been organized. But it also helps the audience, as I mentioned before, appreciate the intricacies, a role that's being performed by the singer and all those different aspects. And that's why, because of the creative development of these masterclasses, going to every one of these masterclasses can be very useful for enhancing one's knowledge of the opera, because they're all very different.
Exactly.
Well, we move on then to one of the most interesting and exciting parts of the festival. And that's the first concert every year of the festival. And that first concert is called Aria. And Aria is going to be on Thursday, August the 7th. And it's going to be at 6:30 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church, which is over on Troop Square. And this is a wonderful time to see some of the young artists. These young singers that will be participating in this are certainly some of the young studio artists, but are also some of the emerging artists involved in ARIA?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great way to get the festival started, come and see some of the highlights of the operatic canon and these young artists performing the crown jewel of what's in their repertoire. So it really is a delight for the art, for the audience as well as artists, so they can introduce themselves artistically to the audience.
The in-house name for this kind of thing is Death by ARIA, but it's and when other institutions do this sort of thing, but it's really not. It's an opportunity to just celebrate the talent pool that has been assembled. And it's really the first time for the artists to hear each other.
Exactly.
I mean, so they go, oh, that's amazing. I have amazing colleagues. I have colleagues that I'm really going to look forward to working with during the course of the festival.
And it gives the audience the first experience with some of these young artists that they'll be seeing mostly throughout the entire festival. And so they'll be seeing them in other events during the festival. But more importantly, they'll be seeing them around the festival itself. And so you get introduced to these people that you can go up later and say, oh, I really enjoyed that performance at ARIA. What else are you doing? And where are you from? And get to know these young artists. Because it's a way that the audience can be part of the family.
Yes, we really encourage that. You know, if you like something, go up and tell somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, go up and tell somebody. I mean, if you didn't like someone, go up to tell somebody like us. But, you know, yeah, that's okay too, actually, because it's all part of the process of feedback and refinement.
Yeah.
And this is also an opportunity to hear the great classics of opera, and as well as you'll hear an occasional song perhaps you have not heard before.
Absolutely. You know, both Michael and I are also involved in the National Opera Association, and it's a big goal of that association and the art form in general is to make sure new works are being highlighted, particularly by underrepresented composers. So we are making that a goal with these young artists to present some of those arias as well.
I mean, no composer really thinks they're overrepresented, especially while they're alive.
That's very well said.
Oh, I'm overrepresented. Just do something else.
That's actually one of the group of underrepresented composers that I like to include in my programming. And that is the living, the live, the breathing composers, and not just a whole bunch of old dead European males.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. In the publishing world, it's actually an advantage to be alive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then after you die, unless you've reached a certain level of prominence, your reputational advantage goes down quite a bit. So composers really do need to work hard while they are alive to get their works to the level of recognition where people continue to want to do them. I mean, I'm very lucky to have one work, at least speed dating tonight, that's going to be around 50 to 100 years from now. And you know, it's the kind of thing we shoot for. It gives you a grounding as the writer. It's like, okay, I've done all this thing. And at least there's one thing that'll be around 50 years from now. But that's what the composer's arc is about. It's about trying to get things to the point where they are replicated regularly. And that's what we're all trying to do when we market ourselves as composers.
Well, one of the great things about speed dating is the fact that you will add additional vignettes, because it's basically an opera of little vignettes. And you'll add new vignettes, often to customize it to a presentation that's being done. And so they can sort of make it their own, as well as taking from the vignettes you've already written, which is close to 100, I think, and be able to assemble their own opera.
Yeah, I just wrote one about someone who goes up to someone to thank them for donating a kidney. So maybe I need to write one about radio hosts.
Who goes up and asks them, can I talk to you on the radio?
Right.
And it sounds like Overheard, the new opera you're writing for the Taos Opera Institute, is going to be very similar in its structure. Are you planning with that piece also to add pieces as you go on?
Yes, I've written two other pieces, speed dating and another one, that have these modular structures. And it's turned out to be a great way for particularly university programs to access work. And I see no reason not to continue to write in that structure and actually encourage others to use it. That's not copyrighted or anything like that. Just a way of getting stuff out there and making it accessible. You know, one of the issues we have in our business is that, and Rigoletto is a perfect example of it. Rigoletto has only two women in it. Well, three women. It has the maid,
Giovanna. And then Maddalena.
And Countess Schmidt, who sings one line.
That's right.
And then there's Gilda. So there's three and a half or three and a quarter. And how many men does Rigoletto have in it? 10, 12,
as many as
15,
you want.
As
yeah.
many as you can put in it. And so what we are trying to work through as a business creatively is to have more works written about women, but not just one woman. You know, Tosca's great, but there's only one woman in Tosca, and Rigoletto's great, but there's only, 3.2 women in Rigoletto. So we need more works that are written that have large groups of women, or at least equal groups of women in them. In most college university programs, 75% of the singers who take voice lessons are women, or maybe even more than. So, I mean, what's our enrollment ratio in Savannah this year?
I mean, at least 50% sopranos. So that right there is right. enough for, you can't ignore those numbers.
So it's great. The old kind of hero model of heroes, those are great. But we also need to invest in our heroines or our communities of heroines. So that, I mean, the Eleanor's is a perfect example.
Yeah.
I think Eleanor's only had two men in it.
Right.
Yeah. So to write an opera that only has two men in it, but at least half a dozen women?
Yeah.
That's great. That's the kind of balance that we need moving forward as a business. and as an art form for people to, for the art form to continue to thrive. And, you know, it's a challenge because, darn, Rigoletto and The Marriage of Figaro or whatever, the Carmen, those are big hills to climb. But those of us who are foolish enough to try, you know, we want to write things that will last and continue to communicate with audiences. And, you know, audiences are different. I mean, the audiences that went to see the original Rossini, La Cenerentola, are different in expectation than the audience that is going to come to see
right.
Royal Feast. The audience that comes to see Royal Feast, or Cinderella's Royal Feast, as we're calling it now, is an audience that is expecting a much more, I don't know, dramatic line-by-line interaction with the work. And they frankly don't want something that lasts 3 hours and that you're supposed to, you know, get up and buy ice cream during
right.
or talk to your neighbor about buying their horse. You know, I mean, that's the nature of attention in the opera is different than it used to be. And so composers are changing with the times because they are of their times, and they are writing for audiences that are of our time. The art form is changing with the times.
And a female character who is very important to the plot, other than dying before the end of the third act.
Yes, Cinderella doesn't die. She becomes queen.
Yeah.
You know, so it's great.
So we move on then to Friday, August 8th. And Friday, August 8th has two events. One is a Masters in Voice, and this is one about a person we mentioned before. And by the way, you'll hear her on this program too, talking about one of her programs, and that's Jody Goebel, the composer in residence of the festival. This one on August 8th is a Masters in Voice, and it is again free and open to the public at the First Baptist Church Choir Room at 223 Bull Street. And again, it works with the young singers to enhance their skills. But here we have first a Masters in Voice with a soprano who speaks to the roles of the soprano in that context. Now we have a collaborative pianist who teaches this at a university, as Chad mentioned. She teaches at Iowa State University, as well as is intimately involved in the opera programs there at Iowa State University. And so it's a perfect opportunity to have someone who works with singers rather than a singer to work with these young singers.
Sure. Yeah, that's really well said. And on top of that, this particular class will feature her repertoire. So all four of the participants in the class will be singing something from her catalog. That might be opera, could be art song. She is hand selected those selections based on those artists. So I think it'll be a real treat for the audience to hear this newer music from the composer herself.
And talking about a real treat, later that evening is a real treat. And this is a classical cabaret called Everything, presented by Maria Zuvis. And the reason that it's called Everything is that it's really based upon her newly released album, Everything. And so she'll be singing songs from that album, as well as, spoiler alert, looking forward to another album. She'll be singing some songs which may appear on a second album during this wonderful presentation, which involves both Maria Zuvis singing and a five-piece band accompanying her.
You know, that's right. As the Milne's Voice programs evolves, so has Maria and so has Cheryl and their career interests. And I'm really happy to see somebody that from whom I learned so much out there and performing. And it's important for the young artists that are training at the Milne's Voice programs to see the co-founder and president, well, quite frankly, walk the walk and show them how to put on a show. So on top of the educational elements, the entire city of Savannah will just love this kind of show from somebody that has given so much to the city.
Maria has always done a really good job putting together an entertaining show. And it's one of her, I don't know, it's almost an instinct. It's just something that it's not just, oh, I do A, I do B,
right.
I do C. Oh, but instead it's this, I do A and it connects to B in this kind of way. And then here comes C in a surprising kind of way, which really connects obviously to the audience after they hear it to A. And so it's an interesting process to watch her put these programs together that are always very unique. And of course, a lot of the material is original, and some of it's even written for her. So that's part of the fun.
And while many of the performances are in churches, which is a very appropriate place to put it, this one is actually a classical cabaret that is at the District Live Theater at the J.W. Marriott of the Savannah Plant Riverside District. And that is a beautiful cabaret space. And I'm presuming that there are going to be beverages that one could purchase.
You can bet on that.
Because it's going to be a cabaret-type performance.
Right.
Not if you care for me. remarkable that things haven't unraveled. We're unbroken and bowed by all the years. We've been through the fire and shed a few tears. Like links in a chain that goes on and on. Our love's forever strong. It's always been you. Star, I trust you with my heart. I'd be much less a mess without you. The truest of the true. It's always been you. And so we go through life together. Star, I trust you with my heart. I'd be much less a mess without you. The truest of the true. It's always been you. With you near, I face the future strong and without fear. I celebrate. Steady star, I trust you with my heart. I'd be much less a mess without you. The truest of the true. Partner, friend, and lover. There's never been another. It's always been you. It's always been you. It's always been you.
I should mention, too, that this album is available to stream on Spotify and iTunes. So I always enjoy hearing something from the recording and then going and hearing it performed live and how those two compare. It really enhances one's experience with the music.
And of course, after that, one will want to purchase the album.
Of course.
Absolutely.
And then we move on to Saturday, August 9th. And Saturday, August 9th, has, again, two events. It opens in the morning at 10 a.m. And this is the coffee concert, which has become a tradition of the Voice Festival. And this is held actually in the Davenport House Preservation Room, which is in the back of the historic Kennedy Pharmacy on Broughton Street.
Absolutely. This has become a festival favorite. And we always really enjoy doing this. This is a great way to kick off your Saturday morning. Come get a continental breakfast, a coffee, some light refreshments, and hear some opera, musical theater, and song, which is what the Savannah Voice Festival is really based on artistically as well. So it's just as simple as that. Here's some of the studio artists that are training as part of the festival. Come and perform some of their favorite repertoire.
And this, although much of it is predominantly operatic or art song, you occasionally will have Broadway and other type of programs as part of this as well.
Absolutely. Oftentimes, I'm the one directing that concert, and I like to have a wide mix of what is a part of that particular concert. So it's a great way, again, for newer audiences to get involved in our festival and come see something that's slightly lighter fare. And then get involved in the festival on a deeper level after a cup of coffee or two.
J'étais triste et passif, car je t'ai rencontré.
And then in the evening of Saturday the 9th, we have David Friedman's My Simple Wish. Now, if you've gone to the Maria Zuvez program, you'll likely hear one or two David Friedman songs to sort of get an introduction to this concert coming the next day. And this will be at the Asbury Memorial Church, which is at 1008 East Henry Street. And again, it's 6:30 p.m. on Saturday, August 9th.
It will largely involve our festival artists. He will be curating this concert and programming repertoire from his catalog, his long career on Broadway. So hearing classically trained voices sing this repertoire is so thrilling, and the varied colors that it provides. So this is a really great way, again, to get introduced to the festival and hear probably some tunes with which you're familiar.
So we've just gotten into the festival. There's so much more to talk about. So I'm going to have you guys back on another program. Is that okay?
We'll see you then.
Sounds great.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Lake. Save this time for another show next week.
Well, I know we ain't headed for the Hall of Fame. Gonna give it what we got, man, it ain't no shame. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.